Radio Free Readout begins in 5, 4, 3, 2.
American Redoubt. This is Radio Free Redoubt. I'm John Jacob Schmidt, your host, and I have missed you guys. I know you've missed me too. Thank you so much for expressing your support and saying, hey, we miss you. Where are you? Come on back. Well, as you know, I've been on the road, and it's been a wild ride, both exhausting and energizing at the same time. I think I mentioned that in the Saturday show. It's true. It's true. I went on a little speaking tour road trip thing from Phoenix, Arizona, all the way to Tacoma, Philadelphia, Atlanta. Wait. Okay. Wrong script. No, I went from Phoenix to Chattanooga, Tennessee, to Atlanta, Woodbridge, Virginia, right outside of D.C., and Greensboro, North Carolina, and Clarksville, Tennessee. Spoke at all of those places and then attended one of Codename K's Ground Rod 1 and Ground Rod 2 back-to-back four-day course, or two-day courses back-to-back. 4 days of training on computer security, anonymity, and tradecraft, and all that other good stuff. It was an amazing trip. It was such a blessing to be able to meet so many patriots, many of whom I have become close friends with over the last couple of years, corresponding, talking on the phone, talking on the radio during Nets, and had never met in person. And so this last couple of weeks, I was able to put faces to names and shake the hands and look into the eyes of some just amazing patriots who are in it for the cause. They believe in Americanism. They believe in our traditional American values and ideals and realize that that's under threat. And they're training and practicing regularly to help keep our countrymen connected, informed, and engaged in meeting whatever challenges we face, whether it's grid up or grid down. So this was a very unique experience, and I don't know when I'll be able to do it again. I hope to maybe even try to do this once a year and hit different places each time, because it was so productive. It was energizing and very positive for the folks that I was going to see. I mean, they've got a new pep in their step, and our membership's growing again, and folks are getting more involved in the Nets. We saw that just in the most recent practice Nets. Super beneficial for all. When I was in Atlanta, which is actually right outside of Atlanta, one of the suburbs is Marietta, Georgia. The folks at True Prep in Marietta, Georgia, opened their place up free of charge for us to hold this meeting, which was supposed to be, you know, Amron Core, and then another meeting with just, you know, general public. But it was almost overwhelmingly Amron Core. I don't know how many people were even in that. 30 or 35 people came, and then I got to meet the great folks from True Prep. That is an impressive store. It is all things prepping. The library that they have, the equipment, the gear, and they're just good people, just great patriots. If you guys are in the area, if you're in the Atlanta area, and you have not stopped in, see the folks from True Prep, shake their hand and thank them for what they're doing to support their business. They have an online store too. So go check them out there. They're definitely worth they're great people worth supporting. They've got training too. They got a warehouse in the back with a sectioned off portion for training and classes, and that's where we held it. And that was just a good time, really good time. It was flying by the seat of my pants, trying to get from one place to the next. It was kind of a crunch time from Phoenix to Chattanooga to Atlanta, and then up to Raleigh, North Carolina. So, yeah, if you guys get a chance to check out True Prep, trueprep.com. Great. We're at a neat store and really neat people. Now, another thing that I got to do is go to a place that I had been longing to for a long time to see some of our history up in Virginia. After the meeting in Virginia, stayed with some patriots there, friends that just awesome hosts. And it took a couple of days to go see historic Williamsburg, colonial Williamsburg. Got to see Jamestown, the first landing site and the first settlement of colonists. And just a few miles away, about 18, 20 miles away, about 15 to 20 minutes away, is Yorktown. Yorktown is the final battle site where George Washington literally was riding his horse up and down the line, commanding the forces in the last battle of the Revolutionary War, where the British finally folded and surrendered. They have a museum there. I walked the ground. It was just amazing. They have a American Revolution Museum there. If you are ever in the area, I highly recommend stopping in and seeing this place. I've got some pictures. I need to do a posting and get some of the pictures posted there, and take some of the snapshots from the video that I took. They have, it's like a living museum on the outside. They have a reproduction army camp, just how it was, including surgeon tent. We got to talk to the surgeon for a while, and he gave us the whole rundown on the tools that were used and the procedures. It was pretty eye-opening. But they're all in costume, in period era correct uniforms and costumes. They also had it's a farm. It's a working farm, brand new, just built. So the orchard trees are, you know, only 7 feet tall, not really producing much. They are growing herbs. They got a garden. They've got goats and chickens, and I don't know about, they got chickens running around. It's a full actual working farm. They're cooking meals on the pot, baking bread over the fire in the Dutch ovens. And it was just a really neat thing. Years and years ago in a life far, far away, when I was stationed at Fort Bragg, I actually had a one-day trip up to Busch Gardens. I got some tickets after we came back from Desert Storm. And so ran up there for a day and had to get back. And I remember passing all these signs, these historic signs, this battlefield over here, this museum over there. This is where Hamilton was raised. This is where so-and-so's lived after he got out of college, all these founding fathers. And there's just so much history there. And I'm driving by going, ooh, I want to see that. And I never got to make it back. So this time I did. And I still didn't have enough time because I had to get to Greensboro. But spent a day and a half just seeing all kinds of just cool stuff with history. If you guys ever get a chance to do that, definitely take the time. So I'll tell you what, I told everybody that I spoke to, I feel like I'm looking at the same group of people everywhere I go. It's like identical. They even look the same. The faces, the looks on their faces, it's like the same different people plucked up and set down in the next town where I went to speak. Different names, same faces, same people. And you guys got to know, you are not alone. There are patriots everywhere across the country that are just as concerned as you are, that see the things that you do and properly understand the magnitude of what we're facing in our country. It's not just you. It's not just you. There are thousands of patriots everywhere that see the same things that you see happening to our country and have the same concerns and that are trying to do something about it. They are trying to make their families as self-reliant as possible. They're developing skills. They're still living their lives. They're still doing jobs. They're still taking the kids to soccer or Boy Scout or whatever it is. They're doing their life. But they're also looking ahead to where we possibly could be going. And they're just like you, all over the place. This is very encouraging. Very encouraging. Even in occupied territory, there are patriots. So be encouraged and keep doing what you're doing. This is what else is interesting, too. I heard so many people say these prepper expos are just really the numbers have dwindled since the elections. And remember what I said. Do not take your foot off the gas. After Trump gets in, this right now is the time to take advantage of the borrowed time we've been given as a gift and double down on your efforts to get your family prepared as much as you can, to develop the skills as much as you can, to get your communication skills up to speed. Get ready to contribute. Because in 3.5 years, it's like I said this weekend in my presentation, in several presentations that I've given, in 3.5 years, I predict that the pendulum is going to swing hard all the way to the left. And you can already see the war that's brewing on our streets between American patriots and Bolshevik communist revolutionaries. It's unfolding before our eyes and it's accelerating. It's not the same as it was even 2 years ago. So keep that in mind. Stay the course and be encouraged. So after I got back last Monday, wiped out, the Sightlanders from South Africa made an appearance in Prosser, Washington, which is where we were this weekend. But Tuesday morning, I turned right back around, packed my bags, rented a car, and shot over to Prosser, where the Lower Valley Assembly was hosting a presentation by the Sightlanders, which you guys got to hear an interview with him several weeks ago. Well, this presentation it was an eye-opener. A lot of the same stuff you heard in the interview with him, but much more also. And that was very encouraging. Some people say, are you going to make that available? Yes, I want to. I don't know if I want to make that just thrown out there as a podcast. Just anybody can just pick up off the air. It would be so easy to take their words and twist them into something other than the truth, and label them as racist and so on. And I don't want to do that because the truth is, they are absolutely not racist. I've looked in their eyes. I've looked into their hearts. I've talked to these guys, met them in person, and have interviewed them and have researched them. And they're just solid Christian patriots to their own country. They love their country, but they have been targeted. Some even have said they've been targeted for extermination because of the color of their skin. I got to spend some time with them. It was really good. I'm going to continue dialogue with them and corresponding and working with those guys. So what I thought about doing maybe is making this available on a CD for like $5 plus shipping and handling and just taking those funds and supporting the Sightlanders and what they're doing with that. So, and then of course, shoot that over to the folks at Prosser for sponsoring that event, but then maybe putting it in the Readout Gear store or downloadable audio file that, somebody can pay $3 or $4 or $5 for to help support that or support some other things related to that. We'll see. I'll let you guys know. But several people have asked, so there's my response for right now. Stand by to stand by. How's that? So then I had 2.5 days to get everything ready, pack back up again. and head down early Friday morning, this last Friday, set up comms, and this was a great expo. They're talking about making it – it was just one day. It's just Saturday. They're talking about making it a two-day event next year. Maybe the gates open at noon on Friday, and it'll go all the way through Saturday night, or – starting Saturday morning and run Saturday and Sunday. They're not sure. They're looking for feedback, but I can tell you the vendors were excellent, great vendors, but you could double the number of vendors there if it was a two-day event. A lot more people would find it to be worth their while to travel and set up their booths and be available. And also a lot of people traveling would make all that distance just for a one-day deal. If it was 2 days, yeah, I'd probably go. So they're actually looking at making that 2 days. But this was great, being surrounded by Patriots. It was a bittersweet weekend. But the sweet part, I got to speak to several people at the booth, shake people's hands, and meet some listeners and new Amron operators. Got to have a private Amron Core meeting. So I got to speak. Representative Matt Shea spoke. Representative Dave Taylor, author Glenn Tate, which you're going to hear in this show. I'm going to air his presentation. I thought it was just great. I wanted to share it with you guys. Patriot musician, songwriter, and rock star Jordan Page was there with his family. Great to see them again, too. Codename K from Combat Studies Group. Sam Culper from Forward Observer, Patrice Lewis, she's a prepper extraordinaire and contributor to WorldNet Daily, Dave and Beth Pruitt from AMP3 and USNER Doc YouTube channel, just awesome people, and all the folks from the Lower Valley Assembly, all of them, just absolutely excellent. And on Sunday, Sam Culper put on a intelligence and tradecraft, mostly intelligence course all day Sunday. That's why I got in so late. I wasn't going to attend that. I was going to stick around till about noon and then head home, work on the show, and get everything ready. But it was such good material, I couldn't leave. And so there was probably about 30, I'm guessing about 30 people in that class with Sam Culper all day on Sunday. New information, great resources and great information that I had not heard him talk about before. New tools that have become available. If you guys get a chance to take a Sam Culper course, do it. Same thing with Kay. What he's teaching, the skills and tradecraft and the tools that he's teaching is just it's out of this world. I'm loving my Sepio. I was not at first. First of all, because I'm on this serious learning curve with Linux. 20, 25 years on Windows and then going to Linux. Man. But a lot of it was my own. I had one of the earlier Sepio versions. He dropped a new kernel on it. It's running smooth. All little bugs and everything. It wasn't just because it was Linux. It was just... He's got it ironed out and dialed in now. I got one of the early models. There were still some things that were real buggy with it. Oh my gosh, it is very cool now. And so secure. So there's so much security built into it. It's a great platform, especially for my position where I am. So yeah, good. What else we got here? There's a bunch of stuff. Oh, Sherry Duvalli from Readout News. She was there. Really good to see her. Brian from Strategic Landscape Design. Got to finally meet him in person. They're supporters and sponsors of Radio Free Redoubt. And got to meet his family. Just neat, neat people. The young man who designed the American Redoubt Join or Die shirt. Well, he didn't design the shirts. He created the logo. The new Join or Die logo for the American Redoubt. Well, we made those into t-shirts, of course, definitely gave him one as soon as we saw him. But it was really good to see them. And they actually all attended an Introduction to Emergency Communications class that I put on about a month ago. So it was good to see them. Now, speaking of t-shirts, the Amron coffee mugs. We've got a bunch of stuff in and more on the way. Somebody's online going, this is not fair. You guys, how come this isn't even in the store? We should at least have this for Amron Core. No fair. No, they didn't really say that. But I'm like, hold on, guys. Hold, everybody, just cease fire. We just picked them up on Thursday afternoon on the way out of town to Prosser. No, Friday morning. Friday morning, we picked three boxes of brand new T-shirts, coffee mugs, all the stuff that we've been working our tails off trying to get done and ready for the new supplier. They came out beautiful. The mugs, I'm going to adjust the color a little bit on the next batch, but they still look really cool. And Pauly01 posted that on our Facebook page for folks. That's where they were responding. So anyway, we've sold a bunch of that stuff. It was very popular at the event this weekend. The rest of it is getting boxed up and shot over to Montana to the American Readout Gear Store. So it'll take, you know, probably by the end of the week. They'll have it. Golf Bravo 01 will have that. It's going to start getting all that stuff up on the store and available to you guys. So just hold on. It's coming. We've been working hard on this, trying to get this sorted out, and it's not been a small task. So that stuff's coming. Oh, and we're going to turn right around and taking the money from those sales, dumping it right back into product so we can expand and have more stuff available to you. So at the God and Country Celebration in Marble, right, that 4th of July weekend, we'll have it there and it'll be in the store. So yeah, it was good, but it was a bittersweet weekend. Bitter. I was just heartbroken when I saw the news that France fell this weekend. They surrendered. The Islamic invaders were celebrating over the defeat of the French patriot Le Pen. She was right. That nation will be ran by a woman. Either her, a patriot, Le Pen, or by Merkel, the European Union. But she was beat out by a snot-nosed Euro-globalist status quo punk who's a proponent of embracing and understanding their invaders, globalist to the core, all about the European Union, France second. It's sad. It is really sad. And 90%? You've got to be kidding me. It was so down to the wire. In all of the polls, the sentiment's strong, and he wins by 90%. Glenn Tate talks about not trusting elections anymore. You don't win by 90%. Not when half that country wants to return to nationalism. That country is so divided, just like America, just like so much of the world. He didn't win by 90%. Something's not right. All kinds of red flags go up over that one. But you know what? It's done. It's announced. It's official. So France fell. The next thing, they will probably have to endure an increased Islamic presence and violence and terrorism until the patriots rise up, and then there will be a civil war, which they'll probably use international forces to quell. And who will they go after? The French patriots. They'll be the new terrorists. Continued destruction of symbols and statues in the South, trying to wipe out their heritage. We saw communist revolutionaries marching to tear down those statues, while groups of conservatives and patriots, those who wish to preserve their Southern history and their heritage, stood nose to nose. The police broke it up. It didn't really turn to violence like some were saying it could. At least not on a large scale. And a lot of these people, their great-great-grandparents died fighting for the South. Whether you agree with their side or not, that's part of our history. That's part of those people's heritage. It's in their blood. And they're trying to purge it from them. When you've got your ancestors fighting and dying for something, whether you believe in it or not, that's part of their heritage. No, we got to erase all that from history. Wow. In the American Redoubt, indivisible communist revolutionary Bolsheviks responded to a town hall meeting that conservative Republican Congressman Raul Labrador was holding at a high school in Coeur d'Alene. It had several patriots there reporting what was going on. It was approximately 80% Bolshevik and 10% to 20% American patriots or otherwise conservatives. And they were organized. They were holding up the signs, a green sign with the big bold print moral, and the red signs read immoral, that they would hold up when they weren't chanting and screaming vulgarities and being disruptive communist revolutionaries. Immoral, godless people screaming and yelling at a conservative congressman telling him what is immoral and moral. Unbelievable. Somebody wrote this. They texted, "I'm appalled that this is happening here in the Redoubt. I'm questioning why I even moved here." Hold on a minute. Stop right there. You think I was joking? Do you think I was making stuff up? Do you think I was pulling stuff out of my butt when I said, this fight is coming to you, wherever you are? If you're in the American Redoubt, patriots, get ready. It's coming. Did you think I was joking? We are not exempt. I've been all over this country in the last 2 weeks, and this is happening everywhere. And you know where they're really turning up the heat? It's where conservative strongholds are. They are targeting the stronghold, the conservative strongholds. And what's at the top of that list? The American Redoubt. You think they're not going to double down on their efforts? The money that they're spending, the ads that they put on Craigslist to hire activists, including benefits, so that they can have this huge presence in conservative areas. You hold what you got. You're in the American Redoubt. You are in patriot territory. You're in conservative territory. These guys are the minority, but they are organized, way more organized than the conservatives are right now. And of course, everything else. I know we got jobs, they don't, blah, 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 blah. But it doesn't matter. This fight is coming no matter where you are. So you can sit there with your bag of popcorn and watch the show, or you can roll up your sleeves and get in the fight. Now, this person who texted this to me, I'm wondering why. I know they're just having a down moment, and I have those too, because this person who wrote this I know is actually in the fight, who does roll up his sleeves, and he engages the left on a regular basis. But it does get to you. When you see this, it's disheartening. But hey, they have to bus people in and pay people to come and hold signs to represent the left. We outnumber them heavily, inherently, just because there's just way more of us than them. When the conservatives feel enough pain, when it hurts enough, that little pin's pushing in far enough, they're going to jump up and say, ouch, and then they're going to get involved. And there'll be some house cleaning that takes place. But until they hurt more, they're going to be outnumbered at these organized type of events. So God bless you, 10 to 20%, who actually showed up to represent your community and to stand in solidarity to support a conservative congressman, Raul Labrador, who had to endure rotten eggs and tomatoes and whatever else, the proverbial attacks. Also from Ammon Bundy, I'm going long here. Ammon Bundy, we learned, has been in solitary confinement, shackled, has gone without food sometimes, and treated worse than terrorists in Guantanamo. And he hasn't even been convicted of a crime. So much for innocence until proven guilty. Redoubt News has been covering this. Sherry Duvalli is in Portland now. And you guys need to be following Redoubt News to stay on top of that stuff. Play-by-play action. She's doing an amazing job. So is Brent, over there at Redoubt News. We've got a couple candidates. Speaking of journalists, I'll get to that in a second. We've got a couple candidates for Patriot of the Year. They'll take a short break. When we come back, I'll turn it over to Glenn Tate, share his presentation. But we got a couple candidates. Maybe we should put this up for a vote. Maybe we should get a list of like 10 top Patriots of the Year and have you guys, we'll put up a poll and have you guys vote. But one of our own is one of the candidates this week. But first, conservative columnist out of St. Louis was suspended by the St. Louis Post-Dispatch after she defended the National Rifle Association from comparisons to ISIS. Well, she fired back with her resignation and a series of tweets targeting the St. Louis Post-Dispatch. She is black. She is a journalist in St. Louis, and she is a Christian patriot. And they let her go. Oh, no, it's not because of her her viewpoints on, it's because of a conflict of interest, because of her what they call it? Their her professional relationship with the NRA, because she's been in some of their videos. But she has not received any payment from the NRA for co-hosting and commentating on Cam and Company and on NRA TV. And then she contributed to an NRA documentary back in 2016 and has never reportedly been paid by the NRA for it. Guess what? See, this is something the left doesn't understand, that somebody's going to do something political without being paid for it. Because to a conservative, this is a cause, something they believe in. They don't have to be coerced by Soros money to get on a bus to go to some town they don't live in to hold up a sign, moral and immoral. There really are conservatives out there that believe in a cause, and they don't have to seek compensation to stand up for principles and things that they believe in. They don't understand this, though. There must be a conflict, a professional conflict of interest working for us, and she didn't reveal her work, her professional work with the NRA. So she obliterates them back. She says, I'm not ashamed that I'm an NRA supporter, a Bible thumper, that I love Jesus Christ. I'm all the way out there. There's nothing else I can do to articulate my perspective any more clearly on where I stand. Wow. Stacy Washington, you are welcome in the American Redoubt anytime. If you want to stay in the trenches and duke it out there, God bless you. We need people in those positions. But if you want to get out of occupied territory and come to a patriot stronghold where you will not be attacked for your views, well, except for a couple of left-wing rags, you are welcome in the American Redoubt, Stacy Washington. And God bless you for taking a stand and not budging. Good job. Now, on the other end of the spectrum, there's this little rag, yellow journalism, called the Northwest Inlander. And this weekend at the expo, there was one of the little yellow journalists there. Now, this Northwest Inlander has maligned and attacked my friends, Matt Shea, Representative Heather Scott, Pastor Shiram Hadian, Representative Vito Barbieri, the good folks up there at Marble Country, that host the God and Country celebration. They have labeled them as racist. They have misaligned them through, I'm drawing a blank on it. So what they do is they say, so-and-so, Matt Shea, talking about the Constitution, using the same rhetoric as other constitutionalists, such as Joe Schmo, who called himself a constitutionalist, which turned out to be in the KKK, something like that. So basically what they do is, by the time you're done reading the paragraph, Matt Shea is in the KKK. Wow, I never knew that. because you won't hear it anywhere else except for in the Inlander. Will you be able to draw those kind of conclusions because of that type of yellow journalism? Co-aligning? No, it's... I'll think of the term. It's a classic tactic of communist revolutionary propaganda and disinformation, deliberately misleading people. But codename Patriot Drum confronted this little weasel journalist who was walking around interviewing people to get their story about preparedness. No doubt, I can imagine salivating at the thought of hearing people say, we're going to hunker down with our spam and our guns and the end of the world and blah, 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 blah. Of course, he wasn't getting that from people. But they sometimes can take creative license when it comes to reporting what other people are saying. Just don't put it in quotes. Then you can summarize what they said. It's a summary of what they said and your impressions of what they said if you just don't quote them. Well, codename Patriot Drum approached him and said, you're not welcome here. Get out of here. You're a traitorous, treasonous traitor and you spew lies. Oh, I'm just here to get the truth. He's like, well, then you need to quit your job and you need to work for someone else if you want to tell the truth. You need to tell your bosses not to take whatever – if you're going to write the truth, tell your bosses not to twist your words either. Ran him out of there, escorted him to his car and said, see ya. And anytime that happens, somebody from – you got to know these rags, these yellow journalist propaganda platforms. When you see them there, you encounter them. Where are you from? In Northwest Inlander, by – there's the door, turn right around, about face, start marching, and you escort them out of there. They're there to harm you. No good will come of it. You won't be able to give your side of the story thinking everything's going to be that you have control of the narrative. They and their senior editors have control of the narrative, and you're going to find yourself saying, that's not what I said. That's not the right context. I said those words, but it was to something – a different question. And then you feel – violated. You know why? Because you have been violated. When the whole while you could have avoided it by not even allowing them there. They have no business there. Left-wing, anti-American, communist, anti-patriot, yellow journalists who master in propaganda and desinformatia have no business being at a Patriot event. There's your marching orders, Patriots. Serious. All right, we're going to take a break. We'll be back in a moment with Glenn Tate from this weekend at the Lower Valley Assembly sponsored Northwest Preparedness Expo. Stay right there.
This is Matt Shea with your daily news commentary, the way I see it. Washington State's $2.6 billion budget shortfall is all over the news, along with the mantra that we need to raise taxes to make up the difference. Many of you have asked my opinion on that strategy. Well, to start, this year is the easy year. Next year, the budget shortfall could be as much as $15 billion. So the solution? Well, I think we need to start by answering some fundamental questions. Does government create wealth? No, of course not. In Washington State, what is the primary funding source of government? Well, the answer is small business. Businesses provide over one-half of the revenue in this state, so small businesses must thrive for state revenue to increase. How do we make that happen? Government needs to get out of the way. We need to cut the regulatory burden on businesses, such as duplicate reporting, and also speed up the construction permitting process. We also need to provide tax incentives for productivity, and we need to reform our workers' compensation system. Government also needs to downsize, just like the private sector. 8,000 new government jobs over the last 4 years. I would head in a different direction. This means that some administrative jobs need to be eliminated, and mid- and upper-level management must take a pay cut. Next, projects like the creation of the Department of Information Security, some say at a cost of well over $300 million, should be scrapped, and the money reappropriated. Lastly, any money sent to local schools and programs should have flexibility built in. We should modify or eliminate unfunded mandates on school districts and local government. In short, we must unshackle the American spirit and put those chains back on government. At least, that's the way I see it. This is Matt Shea. I thank you for listening.
All right, this segment two is brought to you by Selkirk Mountain Real Estate. Go to selkirkmountainrealestate.com if you are trying to get strategically relocated to the American Redoubt and need some help tracking down property, and you are looking at the northernmost part of the panhandle of Idaho. Give them a call. Check them out today. Go to their website, selkirkmountainrealestate.com. Tell them that I sent you. And on that note, thank you. Thank you so much for those of you who have sent in your emails. I've not had a chance to respond to everyone. All this new wave of people moving into the American Redoubt saying, we're here. It's been 3 years. We've been planning it. We've been strategically laying everything. Everything's in place. We got our jobs lined up. We got our house sold. We're here. We are in the American Redoubt. They're either in Eastern Washington. They're somewhere in North Idaho, Central Idaho, they're Montana, wherever. And they're moving to the American Redoubt, which, of course, is the states of Idaho, Montana, Wyoming, Liberty, and Eastern Oregon. So there you go. All right. This is Glenn Tate's presentation from yesterday. No, from Saturday. This is Monday morning now as I'm recording this because you guys already know why. All right. So Glenn Tate, the author of the 299 Days book series. Sit back and enjoy. It's I wish the audio quality was better, but it's good enough for you to enjoy this.
We have a great opportunity. This is, I think, Glenn's the second time in Prosser doing a presentation. And Glenn is the author of 299 Days. Without further ado, an amazing author and friend, Glenn Tate.
Now it'll be better. That's pretty good. Thank you. Welcome. Thank you for being here. This is my second time at Prosser. Prosser is an amazing place. It is a very special place. It is, in my mind, the model of a patriot community. It's the only one I know of. And it's what we need more of. And here's one of the things I love about Prosser. The local governmental authorities, local leaders are integrated into this patriot community. The last time I was here and speaking, there was the fire chief was sitting over there. The police chief was sitting over there. There were a lot of business leaders. There were a lot of farmers and a lot of clergy. I mean, it was a collection of the community. And that's what's necessary, because when things break down, you need local legitimate authorities, people, neighbors, people that are known in the community to get you through this. So Prosser, it's the one thing I do every year. Wow, we got volume modulation. But it's the one thing I do every year, the one public appearance I do, is coming to Prosser. And so I love it, and it's great to be back here. I had the amazing honor of signing that piece of plywood back there along with John Jacob Schmidt and Sam Culper and others. So thank you for being here. My topic today is Hillary didn't win, so I guess we can quit prepping. The answer is no. I'll sit down now. It's an important point. John Jacob touched on it. So Trump won and everything's great, and so we have no problems and we don't need to prep. Attendance is down at things like this. And as you can imagine, that is precisely the wrong answer. And good on you for being here today and for not just going and, I don't know, what the Mariners are playing or something like that, and just kind of casting your lot among the tides and drifting along like the rest of the population. I'm asked a lot about the Trump thing. I'm a political guy. I work in kind of a quasi-political environment, I think it's fair to say. I sue the government for a living, and that involves politics. Some judges are kind of political, by the way. I don't know if you guys noticed that. But. So I have to deal with that. But ask about the Trump thing. And I won't get into partisan politics, because if you wanted to hear people talk about Trump versus Hillary and all that stuff, you could watch any number of news cable shows, and I really can't stand that, so that's not what I'm here to talk about. I'll work backwards from the worst case scenario. I was convinced that Hillary Clinton would win by cheating, by the way. I won't tell you too much, but I'll say this. I have been very involved in voter registration and litigation about the Voting Rights Act, and it is dirty and corrupt and terrible how we register voters. It is as bad as you think and maybe worse. People in Washington State, and primarily I'm speaking to Washingtonians here, I guess, people in Washington have this quaint little notion that, not you guys, the sheeple, that we're so clean and pristine and there's no corruption in Washington State. We're not like the bad places like New York or Louisiana, because in Washington, we're just awesome. They're so mistaken. I wish they could have done the work that I did in this voting rights matter, and it is completely corrupt. So I don't trust the outcome of elections anymore. I don't say that with pride. I don't enjoy saying that. I would love to trust the outcome of elections. By the way, some local elections I'm sure are fine. Maybe some county and legislative district things are probably fine. You get to the state level. How many were in this state when Dino Rossi was elected governor but not allowed to become the governor? Exactly. There are kids in the room, so I'm going to say this. It was corrupt as all get out. I'm just going to leave it at that. I was involved a little bit in that, and it was absolutely, that election was stolen. When you've seen a stolen election in America, it changes your view. So I assumed Hillary was going to cheat, especially nationally. There were all kinds of state election officials that were very willing to throw it for. So I had to process in my mind, and many of you did too, what does it look like if Hillary Clinton wins? And the conclusion I came to, and probably most of you, was that the Civil War starts the day after Election Day. And I don't enjoy saying that. I don't find that funny or shocking or neat. It's a horrible, terrible thing. Some people here, and John Jacob Schmidt comes to mind, have been in places where wars and civil wars are going on. I have not, thank God. It's a horrible, terrible thing. But in my mind, it was game day. It was going to happen, and we all had to get ready for it. We all had to decide what we were going to do. We all had to have an answer to the question, Grandpa, what did you do during the war? And I was going to have a pretty good answer. So thank God, literally, that she did not win. So Trump wins, and exactly right, JJS, we've bought some time. There's some time that we have. Things are not golden and wonderful, as everybody knows, but we have some time to prepare, so do it. You will look back if you're not preparing now, and if you're in this room, you are preparing, but this is a message to send out to family and friends and coworkers. If you're not preparing now while you can, you will regret it. When your kids ask mommy or daddy, why is there nothing to eat? When there are gangs roaming around doing terrible things, you will realize you had a chance and you decided to go watch baseball. So now's the time to do it. We absolutely have to do it. You know, and the neat thing is, in a lot of ways, now is the easiest time to prepare. There's a preparation community, there's expos, there's vendors, there's neat things to buy. We just saw all the communications equipment that is now out there that used to not exist. A Baofeng radio for $35 used to not be true, and now it is. So this is the golden era of products and knowledge, YouTube, all kinds of forums and podcasts. It's never been easier than now to do this, and you need to do this right now. So that's the answer to the question about Trump and all that. I'm going to answer a couple questions that I always get, because I assume that's something that people want to know about. And then at the end, please ask me questions. And by the way, hunt me down today and talk to me. I love talking to you guys. I do this once a year, and I come back from this energized. It's all about me. No, I do. I love talking. Pictures and all that, you don't know what an honor it is, because as I'll soon describe, for those of you who hadn't heard the story about the Easter Bunny, and no, I'm not on drugs right now. It's actually a story about the Easter Bunny. This is a humbling experience. I can't believe how many people have read these books. I can't believe the emails I get about this has saved my marriage and now I'm prepping. I've had people tell me that their faith has been restored in God, which is a huge honor. So, thank you. So one of the questions I get all the time is, when's the collapse coming? And it's a very flattering question. I don't know. In all honesty, my timeline has been off. It should have happened by now. It should have happened years ago. How many of you feel like it should have happened years ago? And what's taken so long, right? I don't say that as in I can't wait for it to happen. One of the chapters in one of the books is, I stole from Tom Petty, the waiting is the hardest part, right? You're hearing the song now in your head, aren't you? I don't know when it's going to happen. I do know it is. I don't know what it looks like. There are all kinds of scenarios out there. We all know about the scenarios. My general theory is what's in the book is a partial collapse, economic and political collapse, perhaps accelerated or kicked off by a terrorist attack, sort of a cyber attack or something. My general theory is the more dramatic something is, the less likely it is to occur. A meteor crashing through this roof and killing all of us, it'd be pretty dramatic. And it's pretty unlikely. So, and I work back from that. So I don't know. I have friends, all kinds of cool friends in places that tell me information, and nobody's come up to me and said, I have the memo that says they're going to, you know, kick out the pillars and it's all going to start on Tuesday. I don't know any of that. It is still coming. I think it's more likely than ever. How many of you think a collapse is less likely than it was a couple years ago? Oh, okay, that's what I thought. I mean, you think it's more likely, right? Exactly. One of the things I see happening, and I actually got to witness this with my own eyes a little bit on Monday, the Trump phenomenon, the civil unrest, the boiling point that this country is at right now, one of the things we're seeing, I didn't predict this, is the pro-law enforcement, pro-constitution, pro-Trump, I don't know what you call them, the anti protesters, right? The veterans and the others that are showing up at these, they're not protests, they're riots, it's mayhem, it's lawlessness. And they're actually punching these hippies in the face. I mean, how cool is this? This is phenomenal. I did not see that coming. How many of you have punched hippies in the face here? JJS, keep your hand down. It's something I haven't seen, and I didn't really predict because I live in Olympia, Washington, the heart of darkness. I mean, it's Western Washington, and it's the state capital, and it is one of the most liberal cities in the United States by any measurement. Social maladies, government spending, any way you want to measure it, it is one of the worst places to be, which we'll get to in a moment. That's one of the other questions I always get. Why do I live there? I'll mention that. It's a terrible, terrible place, and I get this really dark vision of the rest of America, which is completely unfair. That's why I come to Prosser once a year, by the way, is to see, no, I'm dead serious, to see normal people like you guys. And, you know, nobody's throwing a Molotov cocktail and nobody's screaming in my face, and it's just refreshing. So I've seen the, and I call it the pro-law enforcement marchers, out there. And I say I saw this with my own eyes. Get this, I'm in downtown Seattle at 7 o'clock at night on May Day. Through a freak of nature. Basically, I'm suing the government and there was this deposition and this jerk lawyer was keeping me, asking the same question for 2 hours, keeping me on 4th Avenue, which is where the fight was supposed to be, keeping me there, which I did not appreciate very much, which it resulted in a very interesting exchange on a transcript I wish I could share with you. But so I walk out onto 4th Avenue, and I'm armed, of course. I go to depositions with a pistol. Who doesn't, right? I'm a different kind of lawyer. And I walk out the door onto 4th Avenue, and a good friend of mine is a police officer who's on the Seattle PD riot squad. Pretty good source of information, and he's texting me the whole time. And so I find out exactly what's going on, and there's a group of anti-dirtbags, right, good guys, that are marching down 4th Avenue. And there's a group of Antifa, that's of course the so-called anti-fascists, which is ironic because they are fascists. The Antifa people are down at the end of the street. I walk out this door and here it comes. I'm like, wow, I'm about to be in a melee. The coworker I'm with, who's this nice guy, kind of mild-mannered policy guy, kind of nerdy, I looked at him and I was joking. I said, "You strapped?" And he said, "Oh yeah." So when nerds start carrying guns, you know the country's gone to heck. So we're walking out there and I see this guy, and he didn't look like a hippie scumbag guy. He was just this guy, but the spidey senses, I knew he was a scout for Antifa, and he was keeping an eye on the good guys. And I thought, they have observers. They have scouts out there. And as I got closer, he was holding something in his left sleeve. You know what that was? They carry wrenches and crowbars and stuff like this. And so I came up to him, and I'd just been spending hours going at it with people. And I mean, I'm kind of amped up. I got to admit, I was a little amped up. And I was in an argumentative mood. And I came up to him and I said, "Hey, bro, what you got in your arm? What you got?" And I started following him and getting in his face and trying to screw up his OODA loop. And meanwhile, I was getting some cops to come over. And they came over. And then I had a thought I never thought I'd have in America, and I hope to never have again. I'm a snitch now. I better watch myself, because they have observers, and I just pulled the cops over. And now I'm going to be a target. Think about that. Summoning a police officer over to deal with an obvious crime and an obvious threat. Now I need to watch myself. And not from the police either, from all the dirtbags that were lurking around there. And there were a ton of them. So I bring this up. Another cop friend of mine I was talking to, and he said, "We love it." He was involved in the Olympia riots. I have a bunch of friends in the Olympia Police Department, and they're awesome. And my Olympia PD friend said, because there were significant riots, I mean, made national news, you know, "Hey, Olympia is rioting," and everyone's I just put that up on Facebook, and y'all must have been thinking, he wasn't kidding, right, about Olympia. So my friend told me, he said, "We love it, having these anti-protester groups out there. We absolutely love it. It's a counterbalance, and it's important." And my point with all this and how this relates to the collapse, what I can see happening is more clashes between dirtbags and decent people. And then the police in the liberal places, Portland, Seattle, Olympia, San Francisco, all the bad places. I think the police, and I'm pro-law enforcement, tons of cop friends. I think the police, the politicized police, the left-wing politicians that nominally control these police forces, are going to send the police after us, after the good guys. And I think that when we see on TV a bunch of veterans getting beaten up, or the way they do it in Berkeley, as you know, if you've seen it, is the politicians tell the police not to do anything while the dirtbags encircle and beat the good people. So this kind of thing I can see happening, and there will be some terrible, tragic event, and it'll be something that all of us can relate to, because it'll be people getting beat up that look like us, and they're like us, and it might be your friends. And so I could see that happening over and over again and becoming a spark for all of this. So those are some thoughts on when's the collapse going to happen. How many here have heard the Easter Bunny story? You would remember it if you have, right? And this came up a couple hours ago. Somebody was asking me, in fact, you were asking me, did I have this grand vision for these 10 books? Did I have it all mapped out in my head? Absolutely not. It started with a post-it note. Yeah. It was the Easter Bunny story. I had to explain to my wife, who's not exactly into this and isn't here today, I had to explain to her when the collapse happens, and all of a sudden in our garage, a bunch of food and ammunition and stuff shows up out of nowhere. In her mind, out of nowhere, but it was a storage unit. I had to have an explanation for her about how this all happened. And I needed to do it in a diplomatic way, because this is an important time, and I'm not going to pick a fight right now, and I'm not going to say I told you so, as much as I want to, men. You know what I'm talking about. Really wanted to say, you thought this was stupid, and you were wrong, but I can't do that. I can do it later, just not then. So I had to come up with an explanation. It was the Easter Bunny. I was going to say, honey, the Easter Bunny dropped this stuff off. And this was an important speech. I mean, I'm a litigator. I present information for a living. I like to be organized and have bullet points. So I took out a Post-it note, and I came up with the Easter Bunny speech. The bullet points were, here's what I've been doing behind your back. Here's how I've been spending a bunch of money. It's called money laundering. It's super easy, by the way. I can give you tips. It's really so much easier than it used to be. Thank you, Internet. But I had to explain what I've done for these preparations and what we need to do now that this event has happened and all of that. And I looked at these bullet points, and it was the perfect explanation for why to prep and how to prep. And I thought, well, this could be really useful information, because there are a lot of primarily men who are having to do the Easter Bunny speech. And this is going to benefit a lot of people. So I turned it into about a one-page bullet point thing. And then I had this crazy idea that I don't write fiction, by the way. I do now, I guess, but I had never written fiction before. I read legal briefs, and it's a whole different kind of writing. There are no 95 footnotes on every page for something that people like actually want to read. And so I thought, oh, I'll do a little chapter, and it'll be about me and the Easter Bunny. It'll be the Easter Bunny speech, sort of a dialogue thing. And it kept going and getting bigger and bigger and bigger. And then it took about 2.5 years, and I'd get up at like 3 a.m. and write and then go to work, and my wife never knew. That's pretty good, huh? That was pretty good. I'm very proud of myself on that. Any guy that can pull that off, all right, high five. It's funny, I wasn't like doing bad things behind her back. I was like writing this book that has helped a lot of you guys, and that was the terrible thing I was doing in secret. Anyway, I spent 2.5 years writing this, and this is a cool thing. All these people I've met in my life, all these amazing people, Special Forces Ted is a real dude. Pow, when I was here in 2015, Pow was standing right back there, and I introduced him. How many of you were here and actually saw Pow? He's a real dude. Am I right? He's a real 6-foot Korean gunfighter who sells insurance. I mean, it's a real thing. And here's the thing, and I shouldn't say this, but I will. I'm not terribly creative. I mean, I didn't make this stuff up. These are just these people I know. And one of them, by the way, this is great. This is a great reunion thing. Tony over there, standing up against there with the can of Coke. Tony was in, when we were in high school, he was in my Civil Air Patrol squadron, and he has since had a very, very important career in the 2nd Ranger Battalion and the 19th Special Forces Group, and been at the Pentagon. And it was really great to see him. He's out here. So, by the way, would you give Tony a hand? That's some good stuff he's done. There's a scene in the book, in very early on in book one, where I'm in Civil Air Patrol, which is the Air Force Auxiliary in high school, and we're carrying some people in a litter through the woods. And he was there. I didn't write you into it. I'm sorry. I feel really bad now, but. When I say this stuff is real, I mean, this is what we're talking about. I mean, look, that's a real live human being, and that's all these amazing people I met. And so I just started telling stories, and it's all about people. And those of you who read the book know it is all about people. It's not about how many drops of bleach go into a gallon of water to purify it, and it's not, you know, double taps on zombies' heads. It's nothing. I mean, there's some of that because, I mean, I tried to put some factual information. It's all about people. So these amazing people all come together in these books, and I can't stop writing. And you know the story, you know what I'm going to say. These books were entirely inspired by God, period. I was the dude at the keyboard. That's what I did. I knew these people. I'm convinced God put all these people in my life and then gave me this idea that maybe I should do this. And there were things, connections among all these people that I wrote about, and all the stories that I had never thought of before, and I would just become inspired is probably the best word, and writing it out. And so God uses like normal guys, and you know me, and from the books, no military experience. I'm a lawyer. I mean, that's not badass at all, right? And all this stuff comes together. So that's the Easter Bunny story, and I get the question a lot. Oh, as a person who probably dreamed his whole life about being a fiction writer, what do you think about these books? I'm like, it was an accident. I didn't think anyone would read these books, which is why they're so chock full of personal information. So I write these things, and I contact one publisher. The odds of as a publisher taking a book is about 1 in 1,000. First one I call said, how about a 10-book deal? This was a surprise. And then I realized, oh, geez, I should probably go change all that stuff in there about me. But I said, no, this is authentic, and we're going to roll with this. And so that's how it came along. Closely related to the story about, was this book series intentional? And the answer is no. I'm asked the question, what's next? I haven't written in a number of years because I've not been inspired. God has not said, go write about this. And I don't want to write books just to write books, because that means that it's all about me and it's not about whatever message it is that God wants me to put out there. And trust me, God's messages are way more interesting than mine. He invented the universe. He's pretty smart. And so I haven't written for a very long time, but my once-a-year trip out to Prosser, I wanted to make an announcement. I'm going to be involved in writing, and you're going to be hearing from me indirectly. And I'm working with an author named Shelby Gallagher. Shelby, go ahead and stand up. Everyone should meet Shelby. You're going to be hearing more about her. So I get a lot of manuscripts. People send me. Has anyone here in this room sent me a draft book before to read? Okay, these manuscripts are terrible that people send me. They are awful. They are just impossible to read. I'm sorry, I know that's terrible. That's why I ask if any of you had done it, right? Wouldn't have that been awkward? Somebody starts crying and stamps out. There was one exception to the manuscripts being terrible rule, and that was Shelby. She sent me a manuscript, and it was amazing. And it was just the start of something. It was very good. And in the first 3 chapters, I read them, and I had to put the computer down. I was pacing around my house, and I got a hold of her and said, I'm pacing around my house. Do you know why? She said, no. Kind of weird. I said, I'm trying to decide which hammer I'm going to use to cave in the face of the dude that you just wrote about. It was that visceral. Shelby has a very unique experience. She was attacked. I'm going to leave it at that. And she understands that nobody's going to take care of her except herself. And she also understands, living in Oregon, a very feminized culture, much like Western Washington, males, I don't call them men, males are not going to take care of women. They're not going to take care of anybody. They're more concerned about looking like they're overreacting than walking up to a dude who has a crowbar in his arm and saying, hey, bro, what you got? You know, that is not done in Seattle. It's only done by weirdos like me, I guess. And so the perspective she brings to the prepping genre, the story, is unbelievable. It's been missed. And there is one prominent female prepping writer, A.R. Shaw, good stuff, really good stuff. I think people are going to see an entirely different viewpoint. So here's how I'm involved in this. She's writing it. She's doing all the work. And we talk a lot and about the storyline and characters. And she can describe the female character, main one, and characters really, really well. She'll ask me, well, what would the male characters do? How would they react? And so we talk about this, and it's this cool combination of a male and a female perspective in a comprehensive story. And it takes place in Portland as it's falling apart. By the way, she predicted a bunch of stuff that's ended up happening primarily. And Portland rioting is not a hard prediction to make. Exactly. But some of the stuff about Trump winning and cutting off the money for the sanctuary cities and the sanctuary states and the reactions that would have, and Washington, Oregon, and California getting together and drumming up liberal votes by saying, we're going to fight Trump and we're going to have even more illegal immigrants and all that kind of stuff, and some of the political breakdown and economic breakdown. And so it takes place in Portland. There's going to be a chapter that intersects with 299 Days. Some of the characters in her book come out to Pierce Point. I'll be writing that chapter, and hopefully my narrator, Kevin Pierce, who's amazing, Kevin Pierce, the most amazing narrator ever, right? I mean, he's phenomenal. I'm going to ask him. I haven't talked to him yet, so I guess I'll spring it on him. I'm going to ask him to narrate that one chapter that takes place there. So if you want to look at it as the next chapter in the 299-day series, that's what it'll be. And then the other thing we're going to do is the food component of your preps, but don't call it a cookbook book. It's not recipes as part of it. It is how do you decide what kind of food to get? How do you get it? Where do you get it? How do you store it? How do you cook it? Yes, recipes are included. And then in the how do you cook it part, the energy part of it, you know, solar ovens and battery banks and propane and all these kinds of things. So you can see it's the food component of preps. I'm really excited to do that. That's going to be nonfiction, but I've learned a lot. She knows a lot. She's been prepping for about 20 years. So between that, those two things, we're going to do that. So that is another question I get, and it's nice to have an answer for a change. What are you doing next instead of saying, I don't know, maybe God's going to talk to me? I mean, that's kind of a downer. But now there's an answer, so look forward to that. Let's see here. I would love to answer any questions you have, because I find it fascinating. The questions you have are just amazing to me, and maybe something other people care about. So please, as much time as I have, I'd love to answer questions.
Greetings, Patriots. This is Chris Walsh, broker at Revolutionary Realty, located in the heart of America's Great Redoubt, Coeur d'Alene, Idaho. I sell land and backwoods cabins to America's Patriots every day. Creeks, springs, timber, and game, good survivable property without natural disasters. The state of Idaho has a balanced budget, and our people believe deeply in the Second Amendment. Call me today at 208-667-1776 or visit me online at www.revrealty.us. I'll be glad to serve you, and God bless America.
And we're back with segment three, the final segment for this episode. And if you're just joining us and tuning in late, we're listening, about ready to go into the second half of author Glenn Tate's presentation, his take on the state of America and preparedness. And this next part is the question and answer session. So even though you can't really hear the questions, I tried to amplify the questions from the audio file. It's still very difficult, if not impossible, to hear. But Glenn's, he was really good about repeating their questions for you. So just hang on. He'll usually repeat the question, or just by his response, you get the gist of what was asked when he forgot to repeat their question. But really good stuff. This segment is brought to you by Strategic Landscape Design, helping you design your property around sustainability, sustainable living. And they have a new program where they will actually counsel and advise you, as one of their services that they offer, when you're looking for new property to buy and you're looking for certain features when it comes to water, when it comes to defensibility, when it comes to sustainable, you know, food, all of this. They will help you out with that. And I got to meet them in person. They had a booth. They had people there continuously talking to them and asking them questions. And really just great people, great, great patriots. And I never got to get up. I meant to link up with them. It just was a blur. It went so fast. There's several people I didn't get a chance to talk to and interview. But we're gonna follow up with that. He's working up some public service announcements, actually, that we'll be able to share with you guys, too. little pieces of information that might be helpful for you if you are in the position looking for property. Okay, that's strategiclandscapedesign.com. Now, back to Glenn Tate from this weekend's Northwest Preparedness Expo.
Yes, ma'am. And the question is, in case you couldn't hear, and you probably could, Antifa, there's a group called Indivisible that is organizing and funding. I'll use protesters. I'll play along with the media. They're protesters. They're protesters with wrenches hidden in their sleeves, right? When I protest, I'm pretty sure I don't bring weapons. But anyway, I don't know specifically, and I've actually not heard of Indivisible. I'm sure it's a real thing. The left.
They're the ones who are advertising
in place. Mm-hmm. Benefits. Maybe like dental when we go and knock their teeth out. I have the right to remain silent. Anything I say can only be said. Not specifically, but it is obvious. The left has tons and tons of money, and they spend it on things like this. And we know Soros in particular is spending money on Answer and other groups that are doing this. The Antifa folks, if you could see how organized they are and how trained they are, they have to have support. These are not the millennials sitting on their mom's couch in the basement. Mom, heat me up a Hot Pocket. I'm going to get on Facebook and trash talk the United States. I mean, that's what I used to think, and it was funny. I have to admit, I've changed my mind. I was wrong about this up until about Election Day. I thought the left had no game when it came to these sorts of things. I thought it was the same people with their same dumb chants. And they are trained. They have communications. They're starting to arm up, too. That is a real, real thing. A couple really good friends of mine work in gun stores. And all kinds of hippies are showing up for the first time. It's pretty funny, by the way, some of the questions they ask about guns. But anyway, it's a real thing. The left is getting more and more professional, for lack of a better term. And when you're paying people that kind of money, that is indeed a professional thing. I think that much like the Nazis recruited losers in the beginning of when Germany started doing bad things, just losers who needed a job and needed a cause and really liked the idea that they could go beat people up and people would cheer for them. I mean, there are a lot of really messed up people out there, and this $2,500 and you get to beat people up, and if you're in Berkeley or Portland, the police won't arrest you. That's kind of a good gig, And so I'm really concerned about that, and I've changed my mind on that, and now I take it really, really seriously. So they're obviously getting funding and training. I don't know where. I'm sure my friend at Seattle PD does. I should ask him. Yeah. Anyone else? Yes, sir.
How did you choose which character to kill off?
Thank you. Spoiler alert. Wes dies. How did I choose that? The team are real dudes and my closest friends. And Wes is a good friend, but he lives in North Carolina. And so, yeah, out of sight, out of mind, thrown under the bus. I told you I was not creative. So I thought about it. I'm like, I hang out with these guys. I have dinner with these guys. I go shooting with these guys. I know their kids, their girlfriends, wives. I can't make one of them mad. I mean, that's rude. So I'm going to kill Wes because I don't have to hang out with him. See? No creativity. I get that question a lot. Yes, sir.
Is there any hope for Washington State as a state, or we've just got to start a new state?
Got to start a new state. Yeah. I work in and around the Washington State Legislature, and the political power that Seattle and the suburbs have, all the soccer moms in the suburbs who just want more school funding and want guns to be taken off the streets. They're not bad people, but they just don't get the the ramifications of all the stuff they want, and they want other people to pay for. And the hardcore left in Seattle is obviously a problem. But in my mind, looking at legislative districts and votes, which I kind of do, it's really the suburbs that are the problem. You're never going to solve that problem easily, politely, nicely. It's never going to happen. There has to be a new state. I think Eastern Oregon should either be a new state or be included. A lot of good people in Eastern Oregon, Central and Eastern Oregon. When I say Eastern, I mean basically the Cascades. The 509 area code, pretty good. 541 area code, good people. Parts of the 360, the rural parts of Washington State. I don't know that the rural parts of Western Washington would ever be swept in. It's kind of hard to do. And then you get a weird-looking country, you know, our state. Oops, I said country. That was actually a genuine slip. I did not. Golly, that's weird. But no, there's no other way. You can have all the landslide elections you want that elect Republicans in the Washington State Legislature, and there aren't enough. The Republican Party can't find candidates to run, and there's some good people. There's some very good people. A couple of them will be here later. Matt Shea and Dave Taylor, I knew them before I was Glenn Tate, and solid, solid human beings. There aren't enough of them, and look at where they're from, Spokane and Yakima. So there needs to be a new state. I think that would solve a ton of problems. I think it was John Jacob was talking about the battle for who's going to be the 51st and 52nd state. I think California goes, and then you got capacity. I mean, that frees up a lot on the salary cap, right, if this were a sports team. And so now you got 49 states, so maybe Liberty could be the 50th, and then we don't have to change all the stars. I mean, they're like printing costs, right, you know? And all the patches we have and stuff, we don't want to change the number of stars. I think, and it's alluded to in the books, one of the things that's going to happen, either formally or informally, is that regions of like-minded people are going to just either formally break away, and I'm not talking start a new country necessarily, although I can see some of that, especially around the coastal areas where it's more practical to have your own country. I mean, landlocked countries don't do very well. Landlocked states do. And so you're going to see that. And so that would be like a formal thing if states broke apart. Of course, Congress needs to be involved. And then you get to the question of, well, that's two more senators for you right-wing wackos in Eastern Washington, and they won't let that. Okay, well, we'll let Puerto Rico be a state, and there's, you know, then they get two senators, and it starts being this horse trading stuff. And yes, it's a family friendly. I said horse trading, not what you thought I was going to say. Even if that doesn't happen, and that's a long shot because of all the politicians that are involved and the established politicians in both parties, and I know this up front and personal, for the most part, are just worthless. as you guys know, I mean, you wouldn't be coming here today if you thought, oh, I can just vote and stuff will get solved. Now, the informal way that happens is exactly what's happening here. Prosser, Washington, perfect example. People come here, they congregate here. Tony moved from the East Coast to Eastern Washington, you know, filling in the readout with good people, and that'll start happening. We're going to see social isolation, which is a good thing. Everyone's, oh, that's terrible. No, it's a great thing. I don't like talking to hippies. I hate them. I am surrounded by them. I like you guys better. That's a good segue to another question I get a lot. Why am I still in Olympia? How many of you have wondered that? It's like, Glenn, why don't you move? Yeah, that's right. I think God put me here. I don't know how else to explain it. The cabin, as described in the book, was miraculous how that happened financially. I'm supposed to be here. My team of guys were supposed to be here and do good things in the Olympia area. If it weren't for that, I would be in a place like this. I don't have, you know, liberal friends like I used to, because I really can't, even if they're nice, I really can't tolerate them because they want to take my stuff and give it to dirtbags so that they can feel less guilty about themselves. That's not cool. I'm not okay with that. I don't want to sit down and have a hamburger at a barbecue and talk about our kids if you want to steal my stuff. And that's how I view it. So we're seeing that, right? The movement to the readout, and not just the American readout. There are other readouts, Texas and Appalachian and all kinds of readouts. And the mainstream media is so funny. They talk about how awful it is that America is becoming bifurcated or segmented or stratified, all these different words. I think it's fantastic. Because when we are mixed in with the liberals, they end up telling us what to do. They run our lives. And we need to be separate from them. And we need to have a line like the State of Liberty or something. It's like, oh, really? You want to enforce that court order? Why don't you come through this mountain pass right here? Things may get noisy. Yeah, I'm not your normal lawyer. Any other questions? I love questions. Yes, ma'am.
In your books, you alluded to a government that is working underground.
Yes.
So they become public.
Yes. Is there such a thing?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, there are good people. And part of the planning we've seen here with the committees, and they met last night, and I understand there's a regional committee and there's a Congress of committees, that sort of thing is going on. It's not some big secret smoke-filled room with like handshake passwords and stuff like that. There's nothing secret about it, but there is an organization, and I don't mean a single entity, I mean there is an organizational effort because people are doing what makes sense. And it makes sense for people in Prosser and Douglas County and Spokane and Kootenai County to get together with like-minded people and get ready for what's happening. So I am very optimistic that when stuff falls apart, there will be elected leaders, the good ones, the one out of 100, who will rise up and will be there, and they will say, well, I'm the sheriff, for example. There are some really good sheriffs all over the place, and even in Washington State. I'm the sheriff. And stuff's gone terribly wrong, and here's what we're going to do, and here's a posse, and all of a sudden the team shows up, gets deputized, and goes out and does good stuff because the sheriff, and I'm using that as an example, we're not, you know, posse ready. The Thurston County Sheriff probably wouldn't dig us very much. But these groups, and I talk to guys, they've got teams, and they're doing these things, and they've done what they don't want to do, which is maybe go to a town hall meeting and talk to a sheriff or a sheriff's candidate and say, why don't you come on out shooting and doing those sorts of things. It's political, it's lobbying, and that's not bad when you're doing it for good purposes. When you're trying to take other people's money, it is bad. But, and that's what I see, and there will be a vacuum among the sheeple because, I don't know, Paris Hilton won't be telling them what to wear that day or whatever it is, you know what I mean? In their minds, it'll be chaos, and good people will rise up, and you guys are part of this, and you need to be part of this. You can do this. There are frameworks out there that you can fit into. You don't have to fit into a big framework. If you don't want to, go be your own, you know, team or whatever you want to do, but you're going to be much more effective. That's why I mentioned early on, I said that the fire chief was sitting there and the police chief was sitting there. What an exponentially more powerful impact you can have. You've got fire trucks, you've got radios, you got Dalmatians, you're eating chili, I mean, the whole thing. Donuts, oh yeah, the donuts. That was a real thing, by the way. That really happened with the donuts in the book. So yeah, I'm optimistic. When I'm in Prosser, Washington, I'm very optimistic. When I'm in Olympia, I'm less so, but there will be men, not guys, there will be men like me and the team that will go do these things, and we just have taken it upon ourselves, like everybody in this room, men and women have taken it upon themselves, to just get it done. And when there's this vacuum, people are going to look for the people with the plan. The people with the plan and the ones with suppressors and radios. And I'm actually confident about that. And that has been a change of mind that I've had. I thought that it would just be mass chaos and it would be small teams hiding out and doing their thing. And now, especially when I go to I didn't go intentionally, but when I'm at the May Day riots, that ended up not happening, by the way, which was cool, in Seattle. And I see the good guys going to get in a fight with the bad guys. That sounds violent. I don't care. It was heartwarming. It was heartwarming to see that. And that's an example of what I'm talking about. So when I was here 2 years ago, I would not have been able to say that in 2015 when the world looked a lot different than it does now. And you bet. Yes, sir. And the political, yeah, the political, the quickening of the political divide that you're seeing, it's one thing for everybody to get on Facebook and say Trump's good and Trump's horrible. And that was like step one, right? And then people defriend each other, and that's more of the isolation that I'm all for. And now we're seeing the dudes walking down the street going and getting in the fight. And you can just see the process and going forward. On the economic stuff, you brought up a really important point. I think it was 2 days ago, Puerto Rico filed for bankruptcy. I'm going to say that again. Puerto Rico, which is functionally a state, filed for bankruptcy. Never happened before. I think the largest government entity was like Detroit or something that has ever filed. And Detroit, I mean, come on, who saw that coming, right? But Puerto Rico, and it's $76 billion off the top of my head that they now are needing to pay out that creditors, you know, and it's obviously bigger than that, the restructuring. The reason Puerto Rico, as I've been told, I don't know if this is true, hasn't filed for bankruptcy before was they knew that once Puerto Rico did it, Chicago, you know, L.A., California, Illinois, I mean, all it would start this chain reaction. And the fact that, and I'm not a conspiracy theorist, but I'll say this, the fact that Puerto Rico was allowed to file for bankruptcy, I don't know who makes these decisions, tells me that the flood, it's okay. It's a signal that other huge governmental entities can file for bankruptcy. You know, we've all heard about Chapter 7 and 13 and 11. There's this little thing called Chapter 9, and that's when a state or a city files for bankruptcy. So I think that's one of the bigger events. I think it's probably the biggest event as far as, like, the collapse coming that I've seen in 2017 is Puerto Rico filing for bankruptcy. And by the way, how many of you have, if you've mentioned it to, like, friends or coworkers or someone's like, hey, Puerto Rico filed for bankruptcy, what reaction do you get? Yeah. What's Paris Hilton wearing today? I mean, yeah, I find that amazing, too. Yes, sir. Yeah. Good question. I think we're one televised atrocity. Oh, I'm sorry, yeah. The phrase is, and I've heard this before, if the left throws Molotov cocktails, nobody cares, nobody pays attention. If the right throws a Molotov cocktail, it's horrible. It's the end of the world. We have to have a crackdown. And I believe we're one televised atrocity away from that happening. I think that a group, I just in my mind, I always think of it as veterans. Some veterans getting pulverized by some Antifa dirtbags is going to strike a chord. And it might be a large scale. I mean, my Seattle PD cop friend, when he texted me the real-time stuff that was going on in front of me, he used a chilling phrase. He said, Antifa has encircled the pro-law enforcement group. And that, to me, is like a 100, 200-person beatdown. I mean, that's like a really big deal. That's why I was saying I'm concerned that the politicized police leadership in left-wing cities are going to then say, oh, you know, fill in the blank, some conservative guy or whatever threw a Molotov cocktail. Oh, now we need to come down on him. The problem, by the way, I see is that a lot of the cops, even in those cities, are going to be like, no, we're not doing that. Remember when you told us to sit in our cars while the conservatives were beaten? Yeah, we're not going to go do that. And that'll vary. There'll be some police that'll follow those orders and some that won't. But I think it's that kind of thing. It's the right-wing terror wave, right? That's the thing that I see kicking a lot of governmental wheels into motion. And to be clear, primarily in liberal-held areas. That's the only place that you get votes, speaking politically. The only place you get votes and public support for beating up, you know, decent people is in communist-held territory like Portland, Oregon. Yeah, I think that was an answer. Yes, sir. And the question was, with the rise of, I'll call them the good guys, going to these protests, Is that a new thing, and can that swing things back? Oh, alt-right? I don't know what alt-right means. I mean, I have an idea. I mean, I read things, and I don't know what that means. It means different things to different people. I will say, like I mentioned, to me and to my only PD friend, and it's the only two people I've talked to about it, myself and him, the rise of counter-protesters is a huge, huge deal. Politically significant, socially significant. I mean, it takes a lot. We're all of the same mindset here. It takes a lot for us to go to downtown Seattle and go get in a fight. We're not like that. We don't do that. We raise our families. We work really hard. We have small businesses and pay our taxes. We don't go out to rumbles. I mean, that's not what we do. And to see that starting to happen, and it's happening nationally. I mean, well, mostly on the West Coast where the problems are. I mean, in Berkeley, the Antifa folks, as much as I think they have game when it comes to communications and tactics, they got beat up pretty badly. They really did. And that's heartening. I mean, you watch that stuff and you say, dang, it's about time, don't you? And it's going to keep amping up because we have really well-paid folks on the left. And nobody's paying us. What do you think, the Koch brothers are like giving us like hand-to-hand defensive tactics training? Mm-mm. We already know it. Yes, sir. Yeah, and the question was, the left is very command and control, have a single leader, and they are organized that way. And the right, we're all small groups, and how do we get that one leader to lead us? I don't know that that'll ever happen, to be honest, because of who we are and how we operate and how we don't rally around the dear leader, the great leader. We don't. That's not us. That's the communist or fascist mindset. And I actually like, and this is, I'm going to have to wrap it up here, I actually like the fact that we have small independent teams that they're held together by, say, a family bond. It could be a geographic bond, the people in your neighborhood or in your township or something like that. Almost tribes, really. I mean, at some level, I talk about it in the books, you know, they're good gangs, and that would be like the team. And so we have all these good gangs. And the reason I like that is, it's too bad John Jacob isn't here. He was a Green Beret in unconventional warfare. It's what he used to do. I like all these little teams hitting these people over and over. And then if you need to get coordinated, you can. That's your question. Yeah. The war chieftain. I don't know that we do. And by the way, if a war chieftain with really strong power arises in my area, I'm probably going to be thinking about checkmating him because I don't want anyone having that power. The answer to your question is radios. All these little groups, 4 or 5-man teams, 10-man teams, if you can communicate, you know, be at 4th Avenue at 7 p.m., that's how you beat them. And we're way better at thinking on our own, like Green Berets, than the other side, because they're just robots, must break windows at Starbucks. Just go to a Starbucks. It's like a watering hole for bad guys. They'll go there and start... Get a coffee, too. I mean, it's good. I need to wrap it up, I believe. I believe that's correct. So thank you so much. It has been great. Thank you for having me.
All right, that's a wrap. There's obviously more stuff that took place, but that gives you a little bit of a glimpse. For those of you who couldn't be there, that's my way of kind of bringing you there that weekend and sharing at least a small segment of it with you. So I'm back now. Nothing major on the radar for quite some time. So we'll be back to our regular schedules. I won't be on the plane. I won't be flying. I won't be traveling anytime in the immediate future. And when I do, I'll, you know, try to let you guys know. But thank you for your patience and your continued support. Just God bless you guys. If you want to help us, prayer and support and letters of encouragement are wonderful. A lot of you want to see how you can support us financially, which we definitely need as we grow and expand. Everything else is growing, including the cost. So You can support us by, you know, just going to the donate page. The other way you can do that and by supporting us is clicking on that Amazon link. Every time you are going to go purchase anything from Amazon, if you click through Radio Free Redoubt, that will drag an affiliate link on with it. So just put Radio Free Redoubt in your bookmarks and you're going to go to Amazon. Just hit Radio Free Redoubt first. Click on the Amazon banner and that'll take you on. You can buy that new pair of shoes or the bicycle or the whatever, the book or CD or whatever. And it's small, but it all adds up and it really does help us offset some of the costs. So we're grateful. And it doesn't cost you any more. They either pay it out as a way of saying thanks for sending business to us, or they pocket it. But it doesn't affect you anymore. It doesn't cost you anymore. So we're always grateful for that. Okay, you guys have a blessed week. There's tons more that I could talk about, but this is good enough. This will get you guys going until this next weekend. And we'll talk to you Saturday morning on KTW, the ACN affiliate, and then Sunday night for our weekly podcast. This is Radio Free Redoubt. I am John Jacob Schmidt. My name is your name too. Good night.